Welcome to another Joy 94.9 podcast.
Welcome to Orange Ribbon on Joy 94.9 with your hosts Alan, Ash and Hugh. On tonight's programme we will chat to Reina, who is Anglo-Indian and part of a cabaret act with two Chinese girls called the Ladies of Colour Agency. Reina will talk about being an activist, racism, JLBT issues and why they started a cabaret act to get the message across. Once again, we have another great discussion coming up tonight here on Orange Ribbon. So stay with us for the next hour here on Joy 94.9. This is Joy 94.9 and you're listening to Orange Ribbon with Ash, Alan and Hugh. And our guest tonight is a young lady called Reina. Good evening, Reina. How are you?
Hey, good, thanks. How are you?
I'm very well. Now, Reina, just tell us a little bit about yourself. You know, you're Anglo-Indian. A little bit of your background, where you come from.
Okay, I was born in rural Victoria. I spent my childhood there, sadly.
It's all right. I come from the country as well.
Oh, really?
I came from the northeast.
Okay, solidarity. It's nice.
I was a farm boy. Did you go that far?
No, I wasn't that far.
Oh, you're in the town.
Yeah, okay. From Warrigal.
I was near Benalla.
Okay. Yeah, so I grew up in rural Victoria and I moved a bit closer to the city when I was 15. And
was that as a result of the family move or you individually?
Oh, family.
The family.
Whole yeah.
Family.
Yeah.
So you're, as we said earlier, you're Anglo-Indian. Is your father Indian or is your mother...
My dad's Anglo-Australian and my mum's Fiji-Indian, so
okay.
My ancestral history is basically that late in the 19th century, my English ancestors migrated to Australia, and around the same time, my Indian ancestors were quote-unquote recruited to work on colonial plantations in Fiji, which were run by Australia, the CSR, basically.
Okay.
So they worked on plantations. Yeah.
So how did they move here to Australia? Was there like a kind of a promotion, like now you don't have to do the plantations, go to Australia?
Oh, no. Well, I can't remember when, I guess they were sort of liberated from that whole awful system.
Okay.
But basically my parents met in Niue, which is like this tiny island in the Pacific Ocean, a quarter of the size of Tasmania. And they were both working as teachers on the only high school there. And they met and fell in love and got married in Fiji and migrated back to
Australia,
rural Victoria. Great move, parents. Like,
that's good.
What's the reason for rural Victoria? Did they have a job offering or what enticed them to go to...
My dad, he lived in Morwell at the time, and so that was rural Victoria was the only area like my dad really knew. And I think if he like actually thought about it seriously, he would think that rural Victoria is really not the place to start a brown family. It wasn't pretty. No.
So what you're saying, there wasn't many Indians there.
No, not as such. No.
Well, why do you say that? It's interesting you say that. So was that something you saw yourself being through when you were a little child?
Oh, what do you mean?
Like racism or being brown?
Racism, it's really interesting. Like, I guess I sort of developed a, you know, minority consciousness quite late because growing up in an area where there's like, I guess it's dominated by white people.
Yep.
Culturally and demographically, it's it was really difficult for me to sort of see that this mistreatment was actually
much later.
Racialized. Yeah. It wasn't until later that I could, you know, apply hindsight and say, wow, that was really messed up the way, you know, the things people said and the things people did. And
so this is in school, is it? Or you're saying, how later are you saying you did realize it?
I think a lot of my life I was trying to, I guess, sort of deny. Because it's really hard to sort of see that you've been treated all your life.
Definitely.
Like rubbish.
No, you know? And for you as well, you probably think that, well, I'm just born here. I don't really see any difference, but why is people different? Okay.
Yeah, it was really hard, especially when it's coming from your own friends. I think that's like really hard and it's really difficult to sort of come to that awareness.
In looking at you now, obviously with your mixed heritage, you don't have the same colour as if you were Indian. So I make that comment, and I guess I follow up with the question of, did you therefore yourself still run into an amount of racism based on your looks, even though I'd have to say, looking at you today, it's not immediately obvious that you've got an Indian background.
I think having dark skin is like a really huge obstacle. Like, I think it like, you know, the darker you are, the harder it is.
Which you didn't have
basically.
Then, you're saying.
In Warragul, like, I've been called all manner of racist slurs, and I don't think people...
So what you're saying is, even though you are fair-skinned, I mean, we're looking at Ash, who's Indian, and he's quite dark-skinned.
I'm brown.
You're brown, love.
But we look at you, and you're fair-skinned, and I'll be honest with you, I'd struggle to say you were Indian. But you still found that in the country there was a lot of people who did see the Indian and was racist towards you.
I don't know whether they saw me as Indian, but they definitely didn't see me as white.
Would it be because either your name was slightly different or because they perhaps knew your family background?
Oh, they just spotted me as not white, and that was enough, really. I'm not sure what the marker for that was.
That's a bit, touchy-touchy like that. But going back to, so your name is Raina. So
yes.
Do you know what is that Raina mean?
Raina is an Indo-European word for queen, and it's also an old Hindi word for night. So nice. Queen of the night,
ooh.
That's who I am.
Who came up with that?
I did.
No, I'm saying the actual name.
Oh, my mum thought of it, yeah.
No, it's very good.
So were your parents religious? Are they religious?
I think my dad was brought up as a Christian. I can't remember which kind of Christian. It's all the same to me. But he was a Christian. He turned agnostic, I guess. And mum's a Hindu. And I'm a Hindu.
Did you practice?
I'm a practicing Hindu, yes.
Mm-hmm. And did that have anything to do with the way you were treated in the country? I mean, did you... Because you wouldn't have,
Hindu temple.
Yeah, temple. That's the word I was
thinking. Or I assume you wouldn't in a place like Warragul.
The closest temple was about an hour away, and it was like a big novelty to go there, you know. So
how did you practice your religion at home? If you didn't have a temple nearby, and you, by implication from your comment a moment ago, you didn't go very often to the temple. Mm. So how did you pursue your religion at home?
Well, we have a family shrine, and I guess our religious practice was mostly at home.
Mm-hmm.
We did actually, later on down the track, we sort of made connections with other Fiji Indian families who were also in rural Victoria, like just scattered throughout the area. And they started, and so we used to like go to their places and for community events.
And I think with Hinduism, we don't have the legacy of the church or the temple.
Yeah,
we can pray at home as well. If you've got an idol, you can practice at home. So,
Now you said that you moved from country Victoria to a little bit nearer the city, although you're still quite far away.
Yeah.
Was it easier then? Was life easier for you?
I don't think it made a whole lot of difference, actually. Like, I think it's all very well to kind of slag off country Victoria, as I do regularly. But I think, I don't know. I can't really say. I think I felt less isolated in the sense that there were other people of colour around me. Mm. I think that made a big difference.
And I guess at age of 15, I think you said you were 15, when you moved to Melbourne, that would be a fairly impressionist age as well, because all those sensitivities and whatever, particularly relating to racism, would be particularly acute, I would imagine, during those early teenage years. So moving to Melbourne would have been almost luxury, presumably.
Yes and no. Like you still experience quite a lot of racism from students and teachers, which kind of
teachers
sucks.
As well.
Yeah, teachers as well.
This is Joy 94.9, and you're on Orange Ribbon with Ash, Alan, and Hugh.
Joy 94.9, a little less straight than other radio stations.
This is a podcast from Joy 94.9, a gay and lesbian volunteer-based community radio station. For more content, please go to our website at joy.org.au, or if you're in Melbourne, tune in to Joy 94.9.
Das Bahane Karke Le Gaye Dil. from Das. That's the movie called. And the music here is picked up by Rena this evening. What was this track, Rena? Like, why it's important to you?
This track was important to me because this was performed on the cabaret show that we put on last year.
Last year, yeah.
And in which I did drag. I am the only Bollywood drag king in town.
So special. You actually perform on Bollywood music
as
a drag king. Oh, yeah. Yeah, that's pretty cool, isn't it?
It's quite interesting.
Yeah,
but yeah,
we had a drag queen who used to do that, and now we have a drag king.
Yes.
Before we move on, don't forget this week on Friday Night Frequency, an ABBA special with Scott. All your favourites, ABBA songs, trivia and ABBA secrets, plus tracks from artists who have been influenced by the Swedish pop group. Join Scott on Friday Night Frequency from 9 here on Joy for an ABBA special this Friday on Joy 94.9.
I'll be listening. I love ABBA.
You like ABBA?
ABBA's great.
ABBA's great.
Good old ABBA.
So, talking about dancing, I'm not sure if I'm jumping the topic. So, were you always, like, coming from an Indian background, Bollywood was from childhood in your blood?
Yeah.
Definitely.
I grew up on Bollywood. Yeah,
definitely.
I love it.
So, did mum and dad, like, go, oh, you should dance Bollywood?
My parents are not dancers.
Not
like,
at all.
I'm a dancer, and I don't know where I get it from, because they have no graceful, like, they got, you know, the grace of a deck chair, basically. Like, they cannot dance. I don't understand.
I can tell you personal hand experience, everyone. Like, I saw Rena here dance on Saturday night, and she blew everyone.
Right.
She went just off.
Let's rephrase that, all right?
I mean, you guys are bad.
Now, I just wanted to
Were you drunk?
No, I wasn't drunk. I'm just saying she danced really well, okay?
Thank you.
Anyway, in leading up to dance, and I guess leading up to the three of them that are involved in LOCA, as we, I guess, abbreviated to, you met your friends. You went to Monash University.
Yes.
Why were you at Monash? What were you studying, and how did you come to meet these girls?
Okay, I was doing an art science degree. The other two were doing arts degrees, and we met because we're all activists who are involved in our student union. Like, we're all involved in the environment department, the queer department, and the women's department. And they were also involved in Whole Foods, which is like the student co-op who worked there. So we're all like hanging around the same sort of activist-y, student-y union type scene. And I guess we formed because we were a little bit frustrated by how, I guess, we experienced like a significant amount of racism in these scenes, like the whole, like, you know, union activist queer feminist scene in this area at least is like really quite Eurocentric, which is basically racism by exclusion, and it was very kind of dominated culturally by white people, and there was just like a whole lot of little minor assaults on us, which we didn't particularly appreciate, and so we're kind of a bit frustrated by being, I guess, activists. You know, we're fighting for a cause, whatever, but like we just felt that racism was still being perpetuated in these activist movements, which is actually really disappointing.
But this is still in Monash University you're talking about?
Yes.
My God, that's really an eye-opener, probably, if you say that.
Yeah, well, it's I don't think there's anything unusual about it. Like, I think a lot of universities are quite, like, the unions and the activist scene is quite Eurocentric. So, we got together because we met as friends, and yep, we just started talking about racism and identity and stuff like that, and we, you know, all these amazing ideas. It was like just kind of getting together and talking about all this stuff was like really, really beautiful. Like, it was just really, really cathartic. It was just amazing to just get it all out there, yep,
and
to have
meet like people.
Yeah, and have, you know, shared experience. Like, it was just a really bonding experience. And then, like, so all this amazing stuff came out of our conversations, all these ideas. And
we haven't pointed out their background as well.
Oh, so yes.
They're Chinese.
Yes, they're both Chinese, yeah.
And permanence in Australia,
yeah,
living.
Yeah, that's right, yeah.
So they also, they had moved, like, as a child? Or been here all their life?
Yes, one of them migrated when she was young, Leah, and Loretta was born here. Yeah, so we kind of were talking about...
So how did it go about that? Obviously, you guys met, and then what was the next step you guys took?
Well, you know, all this amazing stuff came out of our conversations, and so I thought, you know, we want to express this, we want to do something about it, to sort of wake up the activist scene, wake up the queer scene, and how can we do, we're going to, like, you know, from the publication, like, publish something or, you know, organise a forum, but we, like, I think the problem with discussing issues of racism is a lot of people get very defensive when you talk about it. Like, even saying the word is like, oh, I'm not racist, you know, like, it's really hard to sort of to discuss it in a way in which people don't get defensive, don't take things really personally. It's like, well, hey, you know, we're hurt by this, we'd like to get this addressed.
Yep.
People just jump up and down and get angry. So we thought we'd, like, you know, rather than beating our head against a wall, we thought we'd put on a cabaret. Woohoo! Which we did. And I think that was a really good...
What was it called?
It was called the Loka Troika Cabaret.
Loka Troika?
Loka Troika. Troika is... Apparently it's a Russian word for, like, a trio. I didn't actually realise that. Yeah, Leah thought up that name. Yeah, cool, that'll do.
But you should point out what LOCA is as well.
Oh, LOCA, it's an abbreviation for the Ladies of Colour Agency.
Okay.
That's us. So, yeah, we got together, formed this group, and put on a cabaret to, I guess... And it's basically like a variety show revolving around the themes of racism and identity. So that gave us the opportunity to, I guess, you know, say all this stuff in a way that's really performative and really entertaining. You know, like, people can actually, listen and watch and go, wow, that's, you know, really quite funny. But also they can learn something at the same time.
So like a stage show where its background is music, but it was just had a story with a message anti-racism and all.
Well, yeah, the show... yeah, it's a variety show, so spoken word, burlesque, drag, belly dance, it's a whole lot of things.
The burlesque part of it is quite interesting because you actually told me that you strip off in the show, is that correct?
I'm a stripper. I am the hairiest stripper in Australia too. Yeah.
How do you feel doing that on the show?
I love it. I love it.
So it's like exhibitionist, is it?
Yes and no. Like, my reason for, like, stripping is actually really interesting. I did it from the moment we conceived of the cabaret. It's like, right, I'm taking off my clothes, you know, I was, like, determined to do a burlesque item. And part of the reason for that was because I thought it'd be hilarious, because I'm, like, you know, like, I'm this, for the benefit of the listeners at home, I'm a 5 foot nothing, flat-chested, abominably hairy brown girl. Like, you did not want to see me take off my clothes. I'm not going to be on, you know, the front cover of Playboy or a, you know, Kmart lingerie catalogue. You know, I'm not the, you know, like, people... So, for me, taking off my clothes is, like, quite... hysterical.
So between the three of you, you're the only one that takes your clothes off?
well, not according to a photo that we've got.
No.
Well, that's right. Yeah.
Just the three bare bottoms I can see in one photo. Yeah.
Alan's talking about a photograph that's on your website, and it's got three bare bottoms, and it's got racism is poo.
Poo.
Yeah.
I think that picture is really good.
Thank you.
I'm glad you think so. Yeah, we should sell it to Freedom. They can have it in the showroom.
We better take a break. This is Orange Ribbon, and you're with Hugh, Ash and Alan. Our guest in the studio tonight is Raina.
This is a podcast from Joy 94.9, a gay and lesbian volunteer-based community radio station. For more content, please go to our website at joy.org.au, or if you're in Melbourne, tune in to Joy 94.9.
Akhya Namare, from another movie which is Bollywood, and I think, Raina, you should say what it is.
Ekladiye Kasina.
Ekladiye Kasina. So what is this, like, last track you were doing a drag, what was this song?
This song is one that I sometimes belly dance to.
Belly dance as well.
I'm a belly dancer.
Oh, no. She's got all the moves, isn't she?
Well, yes. I think before we go into belly dancing, we should give the CD of the week away.
I think we can never go into belly dancing.
Actually, well, okay, let's give away the CD. The CD of the week is Axel Whitehead, Losing Sleep. Losing Sleep is a debut album from Axel featuring his hit single, I Don't Do Surprises. Thanks to Roadshow Music. You can call Nick on 96992949 straight away and you could win the CD. So Nick, 96992949. And before we move on, we've got two messages. One is from somebody who lives in... Oh, they say, hey, Warrego was a big smoke. I grew up 8 miles into the hills south of Yarragon. Do you know Yarragon?
Vaguely.
It's down that way, I think, yes.
Yep, don't know it. And the other one is from... someone who says, hey, sexy Hugh.
Oh. I can't believe it. We don't need to read that one.
Exactly.
Too late, I've read it.
All your lovers are going to start SMSing. That's going to fill up everything. So talking about belly dancing, so you, what all have you done? So as part of being, what was that? Colour of...
Ladies of Colour.
Ladies
Agent.
Of Colour, sorry. Pardon me. So you do cabaret, so this is obviously part of that as well, or mm-hmm. you've been doing belly dancing from before?
When I grew up, I learned Indian folk dance. I did a bit of ballet, but I guess my main area of dance is Mohiniyattam, which is a form of classical Indian dance from Kerala. And yeah, I also do like hip hop, belly dance, burlesque, samba. Yeah.
Because for the listeners and everyone else as well, belly dance is not really part of Indian culture that much. Yeah, exactly. So it's just love of dancing that you've picked up every...
Yeah, I love dancing. I'm a dancer. That's just what I want to be. If I didn't dance, I would die. I would cease to exist.
So in your cabaret act with the other two girls, do you all dance?
I'm the main dancer. The other two are they're more spoken word artists.
Okay, so you're the stripper, you're the dancer, you're the belly dancer.
Yeah.
And she's...
So
she's
what do they do?
They speak.
Yeah. Their acts are spoken word. They also do drag and burlesque as well. And I guess some more theatrical comic sketches as well.
Okay.
It's a pretty diverse show, really, yeah.
So is it based on humour?
Completely. Yeah, it's quite a funny show. Like, there's some very funny moments throughout the show, in the spoken word, in the drag, and in every... Yeah, it's quite... The show's... it's funny, it's also quite angry, it's sexy, it's really engaged, it's...
Tell us some of the negative comments you've had about yourself. I'm going to go negative before posing
the question, Hugh.
Well, a friend of a friend of a friend.
Okay.
I heard this from a friend of a friend. Anyway, this friend of a friend of a friend was telling my friend of a friend, who didn't actually know me and hadn't heard of the cabaret at the time. This woman was saying, oh, my God, it was horrible. It was disgusting. It was the most disgusting thing I've ever seen in this life. This woman, she took off her clothes and she was so hairy. She had pubes hanging out everywhere. It was disgusting. And the whole place was full of lesbians. It was great. I love that. So, yeah.
If that person is listening to the show, can they call us?
9699249. We'd like to get her side of the story.
That's it. So is that the only negative thing that's ever happened?
We have like quite a diverse amount of feedback. Like, most of the feedback we get is really good because it's from all of our friends, which is nice. But some people found it quite challenging, like in terms of challenging their own privileges and the stuff that they took for granted in their own lives. So, not in a negative way, but in, like, a good way. But, yeah, we also get people, like, saying, wow, you know, like, we've had really amazing stuff, like, you know, best cabaret they've ever seen, stuff like that. The people of, like, we've, like, the best stuff we've got was from people of colour who felt really empowered by watching the show, really empowered and inspired. And, like, it's really nice to hear this kind of stuff articulated and being presented in a way that's entertaining as well as being really real. Like, it's just really good to hear that voice.
Because you started this because you wanted to get a message across. Mm. Do you feel you're getting the message across?
Sometimes we, we're a bit confused by whether people actually are getting the message. Like, there was one woman who told me, oh, you know, you're drag... Like, I did Bollywood drag, and I did that because, like, you know, I'm Indian, that's music I relate to, music I listen to. I'm doing drag in a way that's real to my identity, you know? And she's like, oh, I love that act where you were making fun of Indian men. I'm like, I wasn't making fun of Indian men. I was doing drag. Like,
so when you do...
It's everyone's different perception.
Yeah. No.
When you do drag, what do you dress up in?
Last year I was wearing, like, I guess the traditional suit that Punjabi men wear.
Right.
Yeah, this year I'm going to be wearing, like, a Western suit.
Do you have facial hair as well?
Well, I have facial hair naturally. For the listeners back home,
don't.
I've got a stick. Yeah, I do. My moustache is great.
You don't have any.
I do. See?
No, I can't say.
Oh, it's the lighting.
Okay, this is Joy 94.9. This is Orange Ribbon with Ash, Alan and Hugh.
Bringing a whole new meaning to community. Joy 94.9.
This is a podcast from Joy 94.9, a gay and lesbian volunteer-based community radio station. For more content, please go to our website at joy.org.au, or if you're in Melbourne, tune in to Joy 94.9.
This is Joy 94.9 with Ash, Alan and Hugh. And are you going to tell us what the track is, Ash?
Raina.
Raina.
It's
Eye of a Tiger.
Yeah, Eye of a Tiger, like a sort of Bollywood remixy thing of it, which is pretty hot. I think it's much better than the original.
Yep.
And Akian. It's from...
Carl,
that's right, yep. Yeah.
I'm not supposed to know this, but I'm just being, you know...
Why?
Bollywood star.
Bollywood. Yes. Before we move on, I'd like to say the Axel Whitehead CD was won by Dean from Coburg. Well done, Dean.
Oh, great.
Hope you enjoy it.
Now, in preparing for your... You've done a few shows over the time that you've been LOCA, the Ladies of Colour Agency. What sort of venues have you played? And if it's between sort of open straight venues and gay lesbian venues, what's been the different type of audience reaction?
We performed a few weeks back at a specifically queer... venue, the Opium Den, and that was like, that was really, it was really interesting. Like, yeah, it was mostly queer women attending there, and they just went absolutely mad. It was really funny. Yeah, it was a really,
did you in a good way, you mean?
Oh, yeah, in a good way, yes. It was, yeah, like, lots of, like, a really cool response from queers. I think, our cabaret shows are very queer in the sense that, you know, we are, you know, quite openly queer, and that comes out in our shows. And, you know, like, all our acts, you know, drag, burlesque, spoken word, like, they're all sort of engaging with our identities. Like, the whole show is about racism and identity.
But do you change the emphasis slightly for a queer audience versus a straight audience?
No, they just respond.
So even for the lesbian audience, you just did the normal show?
Yep.
And you stripped as well?
Mm-hmm. I love that.
They must have.
Obviously, but like the straight crowd, they obviously would have a different...
Well, the women that complained about the hairy she didn't enjoy it.
They just don't go boo or anything, do they?
I've never got I was worried that people were going to, like, you know, throw tomatoes at me. Like, oh my God, this hairy creature off the stage is disgusting. Put those pubes away. But I think queer audiences respond better to the burlesque than straight audience do. I don't think the straight audience really knows how to respond to a hairy dyke strutting her stuff on a stage, basically taking off her clothes. Yeah.
What about the gay guys? How do they react to it?
I'm not sure. How would you respond?
I wouldn't.
You wouldn't? Okay. Well, there you are.
You mean you haven't seen the hairy strip then, Ash?
I've never seen a real strip, a girl's strip, I mean.
Oh, okay.
Maybe after the show.
And if you do, I'll include it on the Orange Ribbon blog later tonight. Check out the Orange Ribbon blog, which is accessible off blogs on the Joy website. Moving on.
Now, you've got, if I could say, you've got two Chinese and one Anglo-Indian.
Mm-hmm.
For your actual show, do you get a little bit of the Chinese culture in there and a little bit of the Indian culture? Or?
Well, one of the objectives of our show is to subvert stereotypes. So, I guess sort of, you know, all these Orientalist fantasies and I don't know, like, okay, to give a bit away from our show, like, when we come on, we do, like, an introductory rap and with a dance sequence, and it's great, and we're all dressed up as Orientalist stereotypes, like, I'm the demure Indian bride with a bubble gun, Loretta is the Asian assassin, and she's got a sword, and Leah is a ninja manga schoolgirl, so, yeah, we're all sort of, I guess, you know, toying with all these stereotypes of, you know, people of colour and I guess what people sort of automatically think when they think Indian or Asian or whatever. Mm. Yeah.
But it's still a stereotype in a way because Indian and Bollywood, like, it's pretty stereotype.
Yeah.
So how was it really different then?
Sorry, what do you
mean? I'm just saying, you know, how you're saying it's not about stereotype. Like, it's obviously, for Chinese audience, it would be like, Bollywood is not definitely stereotype. But you being from an Indian background, you still have colours in it, different colours. You put belly dancing in it.
Oh, yeah. Like,
yeah, so you change it like that.
Mm. So yeah, our show isn't like it's not a multicultural show. Basically, it's just it's like an anti-multicultural show in the sense that it's, I guess, you know, really quite politically engaged with the issue of racism and I guess screwing with people's heads a bit about their preconceptions about what I'm
going to see.
You
really want to come and see the next show you're going to do?
Yeah, good. You can throw your knickers on stage when I take off my clothes or something. Yes, yeah, so I look forward to that.
You take your Calvin Kleins off.
Yes.
Yes.
When throw your there. Calvin Kleins under the stage.
So, when is this, like, so you obviously, how many shows you've done till now? So obviously you just had one play which you obviously repeated a few times. So have you also got something in the pipeline which you've been working on?
Yes, we've got a brand new show coming up for the French festival.
Yeah.
Called The Ladies of Colour Cabaret. Very exciting. So look that up on the Fringe website and come along.
Ladies yes. of Colour.
Ladies of Colour, interesting. Yep.
Now, when you put these shows together, how often do you get, I mean, presumably you've all got daytime jobs. How do you get together and how much time do you have to spend rehearsing for a particular show?
It takes an enormous amount of work. There's also, like, you know, not only is there rehearsing, but there's also sorting out all these boring details, like, you know, you know, I guess sorting out money and buying props and getting a stage. You had, you know, big dramas trying to find a projector and, you know, just all these, you know, really tedious, boring stuff that we've got to do as well.
Administrative,
yeah, it
commercial
sucks.
Things.
I'd rather just dance. If it's just dancing, that'd be great. Yeah.
And I think the hard part, you said to me, the past shows that you've done, you did two shows and it was donations at the door, but nobody donated.
Did. It was like meant to be donation, you know, entry by donation, but some people just walked in and was like, hey, that's great. You know, and they kind of, you know, kind of ignore the donation jar there, which was like, yeah.
But for students, I guess sometimes it would
that's
be difficult.
True.
Yeah.
And we got $300, which is not bad for a dodgy donation only.
Did that cover your expenses?
Not even close, no. But it was nice.
Well, I suppose as long as you get some good satisfaction out of it anyway.
Yeah, we got so much out of it. Like, we're doing it more for like the like, it's really cathartic for us to get all this stuff out. It's really, like, so much fun putting on a great show and having everyone respond really well to it. So that's really what we're doing, the high of performing rather than, you know, not a profit because obviously we're not getting any. So,
What about the longer term? Do you have some longer term ambitions or plans for Loco, or is it really just month at a time?
We're hoping to tour. Maybe overseas. That's our dream, but we need money for that, and as I said, we don't have any. So,
so you want to take this to a higher level.
What about Edinburgh?
Yeah.
You could tell us about Edinburgh.
Yeah,
you
should
you?
Do the Edinburgh Fringe Festival.
Edinburgh Fringe Festival. Yes.
Yeah.
It's wonderful. It's wonderful.
And if you need a Scottish, we know one.
Cool. Okay. You can finance our show, too, if you want.
If you need a sexy Hugh, I'm here.
Cool.
No, but that's something that, you know, that your act would probably go down really well on the Fringe Festival in Edinburgh because they get weird and wonderful acts there, really.
Awesome. And we are very weird and wonderful.
Yeah,
so cool.
So is this something you're going to keep doing? Coming throughout the times?
Yeah, we're like, we're hugely, like, this has been the biggest, most exciting thing I've ever done in my entire life. So it's been really empowering and inspiring, and I think we've grown a lot. We've got a lot of confidence out of it. We just feel really empowered now, and which is really a really important thing to have as people of colour, I think, to feel empowered. So it's just like this beautiful, amazing, wonderful project, and we just feel so privileged to be a part of it. It's just, yeah. Great.
You should really look at performing at the Midsummer Festival and all that.
Yeah, we're looking at that.
Yeah, because that'll be a good opportunity to show what you've got and for the audience, obviously not the paying audience, but you know, just for the arts.
Certainly worthwhile trying to see if, I don't know what the, I'm sure you'd contact the Midsummer office and they'd be able to tell you the deadline dates and all that sort of thing, but it'd be worthwhile trying that.
Cool.
Anyway, we're getting a little bit running out of time, as usual. So
we need to also come and talk to these other two girls, and we're going to invite them on the show as well.
Great. Cool. Have a party.
And just recapping, your event is coming up when? With the Fringe Festival?
Yes, our first show is on the 26th of September. You can get tickets on the Melbourne Fringe website, and it's a great
cool. Yeah, I'm sure it'll be a great show.
Yeah.
Well, unfortunately, that's On Driven for another week. Our special thanks to Raina for her story. Coming up next on Joy is the team from the Sports Lounge. Thanks for joining us on Orange Ribbon tonight. We'll be back again at the same time, 7 p.m. next Wednesday, with more insights into our GLBT multicultural community here in Australia and around the world. Thank you to Nick on reception for his help tonight.
Thank you, Nick.
He's not looking at us, but never mind. From Alan, Ash and myself, Hugh, goodbye. And to Jason, bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Who's Jason?
Oh, Jason's goodbye. A sexy boy.
This has been another Joy 94.9 podcast. Joy 94.9 is a gay and lesbian volunteer-based community radio station committed to providing a voice for the diverse GLBTI communities. You can support our work by becoming a member or making a donation. For details, go to joy.org.au.